Today, we're talking offensive line. And if you've listened to Plant the Spear for any amount of time, you know Michael and I both agree that this is the most important position in football. Because Michael, as we say all the time, if the offensive line don't go, nothing else is going to go. So this is really the key to everything for Florida State in 2026. Like, if you doubt the defense, you got to score points to win. Can't score points without the offensive line. So we're going to break it all down for you guys today. Five new starters up front for Florida State in 2026. We're going to talk about some reasons to feel confident in this new group, some concerns that we might have with this new group, and how it all fits in with the offense. So appreciate you guys watching. I'm Jesse. That's Michael. We're the guys from Plant the Spear and excited to get into another position preview. Michael, we've been rolling these things out, doing a lot of in-depth looking at Florida State for 2026. So if you've missed any of them, make sure you go back and check them out. This will be our final position preview for the offense. And so, man, excited to jump into the offensive line.
Yeah, listen, the two biggest, you know, we talk about all the time, the biggest position on the field outside of quarterback is offensive line. You could probably say offensive line and defensive line, 1A, 1B. The trenches are the most important part. And like you said, if you don't have a great offensive line, then you don't have to worry about scoring because you ain't going to do much of that. We saw that in 2024 when we had a terrible offensive line. And so this year we're getting into, will this line resemble more of what we saw last year? Is it a reversion to 2024? Or could we potentially see something like we saw in 2022? We'll get into that right now.
Yeah, Lord, I hope it's not 2024. That's dead, buried, and gone. Let's never bring that back. Because it was one of the worst that we've ever seen. But to your point, if you have something like that, you're dead in the water before you even get started, right? It doesn't matter if Ashton Daniels is good or not, because you're not going to be able to do anything. And, you know, to your point, like when you say, you know, you bring up games are won and lost in the trenches, like even when we interviewed Jimbo Fisher at ACC Media Days, like the one thing that he said was, look, Florida State, and we've been saying this too, Florida State has skill, they have talent at the skill position.
Exactly.
But if you can't get the ball to them because the offensive line can't open holes, can't give the quarterback time, none of that matters.
Right.
And so it all starts up front. Now, we're not offensive line coaches. I did play offensive line in high school, so I do know some of the difficulties that these guys face, the challenges that they face. And I know how important it is, man. And so we're going to get into this. We're going to talk about some of the setup, some of the reasons that just overall thoughts on this group, the coaching. We're going to get into the personnel. We're going to break it all down for you guys. Now, before we do that, I want to bring you a quick word from today's sponsor, and that is Alumni Hall FSU. Look, guys, we are just over a month away from the season starting. And so it is time, before you get back to Doak, to get you some new FSU gear. And the best place to do that is Alumni Hall FSU, 1415 Timber Lane Road in Tallahassee, or you can shop online at alumnihall.com. Navigate over to the FSU page and save yourself some money by using code SPEAR to save 10%. That's where I got this hat, which I'm loving.
So
this
nice
new hat and this polo. So go over there and head over there and check that out. We might even be giving one of these away in the PTS community coming up. So we'll tell you more about that later. So Michael, let's get into the setup, right? Obviously, as we talked about, when you look at Florida State in 2026, there's a lot of questions for this team, right? There's some things that you feel good about, but there's some questions when you talk about the defensive line and quarterback and all that stuff. There, to me, is none bigger than the offensive line. And the reason for that is you're starting over from scratch again this year. Again. Five new starters. Now, it doesn't mean it's going to be five transfers like last year, but it's going to be five new starters. And, man, the point, like, you can go back and look at what some of these guys have done other places, but the point is, man, we've simply never seen them play together or in Garnet and Gold, so we really don't know what we're going to get from this group. And as we said, there's a lot of potential in this offense, but, like, if you don't figure this out, that won't matter. And now last year's group, as you guys know, was five new starters.
Right.
From, well, I mean, you had kind of the carryover Richie Leonard from 24, but I won't say last year's line was great, but it was definitely solid. And so the hope is that Herb Hand can kind of assemble another group of guys and put them together and get a good product out of it. Now, when we look at this group, man, I have to be honest, right? I don't think the ceiling is as high for this group as it was last year, because a lot of people forget, like, Micah Pettis was a top 10 graded tackle coming in from the SEC. Gunnar Hansen started for Vanderbilt. Luke Pettibon was the highest graded returning center in the ACC. and lived up to the hype. He was very good at Florida State. You know, one of the two guards played for Herb Hand at UCF, and the other was a former starter at Florida and Florida State. And so, like, you really kind of had a lot of power four experience, a lot of guys who had a lot of experience that you knew were going to be pretty good coming in. You just had to gel them together because, you know, again, as we know with the offensive line, it ain't about one, it's about five. It's the cohesiveness of the group. But you had a lot of good ingredients to put into that cake, right?
Yep.
The biggest challenge that they had last year was they just weren't healthy in spring.
Correct.
So they really didn't have a lot of time to gel, which they did this year. And so, you know, we're going to go through the personnel here in just a minute for this 26 offensive line. But really, Xavier Chaplin is the only guy coming in with a good power four history, but he also struggled last year, right?
Yep.
Braden Joyner has power four history coming in from Purdue and Auburn. It's just not all great, right? And then you have some G5 guys, some FCS guys, some homegrown guys who I'd like to see get in the mix. But, man, they don't have a whole lot of history on the field to point at either. So, to me, the question isn't even necessarily about the starting five. It's about the pieces within that starting five, too, because we can't go, this guy was top 10 graded here. This guy was number one there. So, again, man, there's I think there is reason for optimism for this group, which we'll get into next. And I think they will have a decent floor because they are some, you know, they do have some experience and they have a good coach. I'm putting my faith in Herb Hand. But, man, I just when I look at this group, I do worry a little bit about their ceiling and how good they can be because last year the pieces that you brought in were just better on paper than what you had this year. Now, that being said, last thing I'll say, I'll throw it to you before we get into the some of the reasons for optimism here. Look, the method that FSU kind of took this year, when you look at it, I think they did trade a little bit of their ceiling for multiple years of eligibility so they don't have to do this again, right? Last year, they took a lot of guys who were kind of high-end guys. They were all one-year rentals. This year, Xavier Chaplin is really your only one-year rental. So the rest of the guys, you have some runway, and I think Florida State just kind of took some trade-off with that. So you're hoping it may not matter because they may not be here next year anyway if the staff gets washed. But, man, I think that is something to understand, too, that they did trade some of that ceiling for multiple years so they don't have to do this again.
Yeah, because the approach they took in 24 to bring up that horrid season – was they took multiple year runs, but they took a lot of offensive linemen that had potential, had talent, but didn't have experience. And then it turned out that the offensive line coach just didn't develop and didn't recruit.
Yeah.
You know, well, he recruited well, but he just didn't develop any of them.
Yeah.
And he just kept taking these guys and he recruited heavily on potential. Well, this time what they're doing is they're saying, okay, we're going to go after these multi-year guys, but they at least need to have some form of experience. They need to have played some. They need to have several snaps under their belts. And then, yeah, they might not have had the greatest, you know, experience somewhere else, but maybe if we get them in our system under Herb Hand, we can actually pull out their greatness or get them to their higher potential there. So that's the strategy that they're kind of looking at this year. You know, as far as their ceiling is concerned, I would totally agree with you. I think their ceiling is going to be limited by the fact that they don't have a lot of great experience outside of Xavier Chaplin of like high end quality offensive line play, you know, themselves. Now, the hope is, and what makes us say that they're going to have a decent ceiling is we're lending credit to Herb Hand and what we saw him produce last year with 5 1-year rental new starters. So we're assuming that he can then take this group, which he's having a more health, he's had a healthier spring. So they were able to get through the entire spring without any injuries, at least what we know of so far. They're getting ready to go into camp, which, by the way, starts July 29th, that Wednesday. That became official, and they're getting ready to go in the camp with healthy bodies. We think that they're going in with 8 potential different players that they can, you know, pick and choose from. We have a set of 5 that we think are going to start. We'll talk about that later. But they're going in, and we're assuming that Herb Hand, now that he's had a whole healthy spring and be able to go into camp healthy, that he's going to be able to get them further along than they were last year. I remember last year, one, I can't remember which offensive line said it, but he was like, we're doing things now that we should have done in the spring, but we couldn't do in the spring because we were all unhealthy.
Yeah, they couldn't. I mean, I don't think all 5 played at the same time at all in spring last year. And that's huge, man, because you can have all the talent in the world, but if you can't play as a cohesive unit, it's just hard to be good as one, right?
Absolutely.
Because it's five guys that got to play as one. So let's get into some reasons for optimism, because, you know, when we start talking about things, look, man, I'm not going to lie to you. There's a few things that made me nervous about this group when I started kind of scouting the individual players. But let me get into some reasons for optimism, all right? The first one here is kind of the most, the simple one, right? Pretty much every starter, depending on how things shake out, obviously we're going to give you our starting five. We don't know if that's going to be the starting five, right, is more than likely going to be an upperclassman, right? Yep. Which means they do have some experience. They've at least been in a college level strength and conditioning program for a few years. So it's not like you're, now there is one I think that could be starting that's an underclassman, depending on how things shake out, but it's not like you got a true freshman left tackle or something like that, that you're having to rely on. So that to me is at least the first thing there, because last year we know those were all obviously upperclassmen. They were seniors or redshirt seniors. And so the next one, and this is a really big one, which is what we just talked about. They were actually healthy this spring. And that's huge, man, because Mike Norvell even talked about this at Media Days and how important it was that they actually had time to kind of build that continuity on the offensive line. Like, to your point, last year, you know, I think Herb Hand talked about it before the fall camp when they had their luncheon or whatnot, where they're like, look, man, we didn't, our starting five was never on the field at the same time because none of them were healthy. So getting that puts this group, whether you think their ceiling is high or not,
right,
way farther ahead than last year's group was as a unit, right? And that makes me feel good. Plus, also, you do get a week zero game to get kind of game reps as one. Now, we know they came out and they performed well against Alabama in game one last year, and that's good. But, you know, if we are a little more concerned about this group, at least you do get New Mexico State to kind of figure things out. You know, maybe you can still kind of work on who's going to be the starting five and things like that if you don't feel confident in who they are. So I do like to get that tune-up game there as well. Now, the third reason I have here for some confidence is they do have good size across the board, and I think they have better depth this year, right? Which the staff has talked about, because although Herb Hand doesn't rotate a whole lot, like just having options in case of injury or if a guy doesn't work out like you think he does, having eight guys you feel good about is better than having five guys you like and nothing behind it. Because, you know, last year you had your starting five and thank goodness they stayed healthy most of the season. But really after that, you had Jacob Rizzi and that was it.
You really
had six guys, man. That was pretty much it. Now, because he doesn't rotate a whole lot, you didn't build a lot of depth last year, which is kind of a byproduct that I don't like for some of the homegrown guys. But at the same time, I do feel like you got eight or nine guys you feel comfortable with if you had to put them in this year. And so I do like the depth a little bit. But then, man, and this will be the last one for the reason for confidence here, and I'll throw it back to you for some thoughts, is the one we've talked about pretty much throughout the whole opening of the show is Herb Hand, right? You know, you talked about Atkins and how he could recruit, but he really couldn't develop. Now, look, Herb Hand, man, hey, look, it's time to start recruiting
because
we got some problems on the recruiting trail, but the development is not something that I question under Herb Hand, right? He's a really good offensive line coach. You know, just some numbers to make you feel better about this. He took Florida State from 63rd of 68 Power Four teams in pass block efficiency grade from 24 to 25, 63 of 68 teams to 19th last year.
Wow.
Right.
That's good.
And so disgusting talking about 2024, 132nd in rush yards per carry to 18th in 1 year. He worked miracles. Now, granted, it's an entirely new unit, but, you know, so I think the other thing too is like, okay, well, he had one good year. Can he do it again? Well, let's look back at some of his history at UCF with Gus when he was their offensive line coach there in pass block efficiency. You know, in 24, they had quarterback problems. Well, they still finished 27th. Florida State was 63rd, as I mentioned. In 23, they finished 9th in pass block efficiency, and Florida State finished 21st. Now, this is your kind of pass block grade, which is weighted towards pressures and sacks. In 2022, they were 12th. Even Florida State's good rushing offensive line that year was 50th in pass blocking. In 2021, they were 4th. Florida State was 57th. So he's had a top 15 in pass block efficiency grade on the offensive line 3 out of the 4 years that he's been at UCF, and 4 out of the 5 years since between UCF and Florida State was top 20. So he's produced some pretty good units from a pass blocking standpoint. Now, I know you're probably thinking like, okay, well, Gus is a really, you know, Gus's offense was very rush heavy. Is that even, you know, what about the rush numbers? Well, that's good too. And when you look at rush yards per carry, that's why I use yards per carry, not yards per game, because if you run the ball, like an option team is going to be your, the best there. But rush yards per carry, they were in 24, they were fourth. As I mentioned, Florida State was 132nd. In 23, they were fifth. Florida State was 46. In 22, which was FSU's best rushing run blocking offensive line, they were eighth. UCF was 19th. And then in 21, UCF was 11th and Florida State was 40th. So you can see, man, year in and year out, both in the run and the pass, Herb Hand has been able to put together top 20, top 10 level offensive lines from a rush yards per carry and a pass blocking perspective. And now I went a little bit farther back with UCF because I did want to include that 2021 and 2022 was not just all RJ Harvey, you know, having kind of like a Dalvin Cook type of season where he was good no matter what the offensive line looked like, right? He was not their primary back in 21 and 22. So the offensive line was still doing work without having that dominant back. But hey, look, we have some good backs too, right?
Right.
And I did also go back and I wanted to look at a couple things because we talk about the players individually and the ceilings and things like that of what they come in. Man, I went back and looked at what UCF's offensive line kind of consisted of. Since 2021 to 2024, only two of their offensive line the entire time at Central Florida were four stars out of high school. And they were both rated three-star transfers when they got to UCF. And they also frequently plugged in new starters. So the point of that is when you look at this group, like, okay, we have some G5 guys, we have some FCS guys, we have some, you know, a couple of three stars or whatever. Look, Herb Hand, the lines that we just talked about that he produced was basically all three stars. So it's not like he's just, you know, pumping out good offensive lines because he's got a bunch of five stars like a Georgia or an Alabama or something like. So, you know, he's been able to do good things with not really great clay. And then the last thing I want to say is I did see actually someone else pointed this out on, I think it was Twitter or social media, YouTube or something recently, another FSU outlet that said something about Florida State took 23 sacks last year, and that's not good. And yeah, that's true, man. I get it, right? Now, PFF credits them with 19, but Tommy was 15 of those, right? We had some other guys take sacks too. So that's probably behind the non-starting offensive line. Man, some of that falls on the quarterback, right? So the thing that when they talked about giving up 23 sacks, the thing that they omitted was that Tommy was 11th highest in power four quarterbacks among allowed pressures that the quarterback was responsible for. So he was almost top 10 in being the most responsible for the pressures that he was under. He was also top five in taking the longest time to throw the football.
Yes.
Right? Under 2.5 seconds, he only took 3 sacks. Over 2.5 seconds, he took 12 sacks.
Yep.
So a lot of that stuff is on the quarterback, man. And, you know, to say like, oh, well, he got sacked 15 times. You know, if that happens again this year, we're not going to be good. Look, Pitt's quarterback, Mason Heinsohn, he was sacked 32 times in 388 dropbacks, and they were 6-1 with him as a starter. I think they're only in the ACC. I think their only loss was to, like, Miami.
Yeah.
Ty Simpson was sacked 30 times last year. Darian Mensa, 28 times. Fernando Mendoza, 25 times he was sacked last year. So, to me, when you just use raw sack numbers, you got to include some of the quarterback stuff too, man. So to throw it back to you, again, the reason that I feel confident is you got some upperclassmen who've got some experience, you got some size, and then you got an O-line coach that has consistently produced good offensive lines for the past 5 years without necessarily doing it with just having a ton of talent to work with.
Right. Right. Yeah. And when you go back and look at last year's offensive line and the sack numbers, I mean, my goodness, if you watch any of the games, you would see that. Yeah, there may have been of the whatever number it was, 15, 23, whatever the 23 number. Yeah, that's sure. There's probably, you know, 5 or 6 you could give to the offensive line. But a majority of them is Tommy standing back there just doing
5'10" guy that can't even see over the offensive line.
Exactly. Like, doing God knows what, and then running around in the backfield instead of running towards the line of scrimmage. So I would say that it shouldn't color your perception of Herb Hand's ability to coach this offensive line. I think the pass block efficiency, the yards per carry, I think that should give you more confidence in who he has been over long term, because it's not just one or two seasons that he's produced that. This is over steady, long term, consistent production that he's brought in from the yards per carry and the pass block efficiency as well, too. And then also, I would just say that, and I'll throw this back to you in this, is that I think with this offensive line, you have to assume that they went out and got multi-year guys, but they did go out and get experience. So it's not like these guys are coming in with no experience whatsoever, right. No snaps whatsoever. The experience may not have been the best experience, but oftentimes it just takes maybe a different person to unlock the good potential in somebody. You know, there are times where some coaches, they can't get everything out of they want to get out of a quarterback or a player, but then they go to a different coach and it's like, where was that player at this whole time? Right. But then that coach can't get something out of this player. And he goes to another coach and that coach gets something out of them. I mean, there are hundreds of thousands of cases that we could point to in the season. I mean, look at Jordan Travis, probably the biggest thing ever. Right.
Yeah.
He couldn't cut it at Louisville. Couldn't cut it under Willie Taggart. And yet, And even in the beginning with Mike Norvell, there was something about that. But Kenny Dillingham worked with him. Next thing you know, he's a finalist for a Heisman Trophy. Look at Jerry.
Johnny Bruce. Wilson's another Johnny good example, Wilson. Right? This is a great example. He had literally the Heisman winner at LSU playing quarterback at Arizona State, entered the portal and said, I don't think anybody's going to want me.
Only
goes to Florida State and does great.
Only had 200 something yards when he came to Florida State out of Arizona State, and next you know turns into a high draft pick in the NFL draft, right? Because it just took more. So my point of saying all that is that these guys might not come in with the best experience, but they come in with plenty of experience, and they're coming with a offensive line coach who has shown consistency to be able to produce a very high functioning offensive lineman.
Yeah, and it gives you a chance to evaluate Herb Hain and these guys based on college level film. So you kind of do have a good idea of what you're getting. And obviously he sees something that he feels like he can mold. Now let's talk about a couple of things scheme wise before we get into the personnel. You know, there are a couple of things that I do question about this that I do kind of wonder the byproduct of Gus retiring, right? Is Herb Hain did kind of build the 2025 offensive line, he built the 2025 offensive line based on that inside zone scheme that Gus likes to run. And then, you know, when you go to recruit for this year's offensive line out of the portal, Gus was still the offensive coordinator. So you're thinking, hey, I need big body guys that can run this inside zone scheme because it's really about power and size more than it is anything else. Well, Mike Norvell doesn't run inside zone all the time, right? He's more of a multiple guy. Like you have inside zone, outside zone, you have split zone, you have the gap, counter, all that type
trap
of stuff. Yep. Pin and pull. Like these are things that just require different types of bodies. You have to be able to pull in this. So it's almost like, you have to almost recruit a kind of a different kind of offensive line for that. But I do think watching some film, I think some of these guys are going to be okay. But, you know, again, man, that is the one thing that I do kind of wonder if they could go back knowing they're going to be running an offense that requires different types of things. Like I think Xavier Chaplin's going to be one of your better offensive line, right? But do you get a guy who's 6'8", 350 if you need a tackle to pull?
Right.
Maybe not. Right. It worked great with Micah Pettis being a mountain of a man when you're running inside zone where basically you're just double teaming and getting to the second level. Right. But when you're having to do stretch plays like outside zone or counter where you're having to pull or pin and pull into the things that we talked about, you do kind of want more of an athletic offensive lineman. So that is something I think that will be interesting to watch as this group shakes out.
Yeah. What I'll say to that is, I can't believe I'm saying to defend Mike Norvell. That's weird. But to give some credence to what Mike Norvell does, the one thing I've always appreciated about him is that he says it all the time, that his offense is built for playmakers. They will tailor the offense around who they have. And so I imagine that when Gus retired, which, again, to all of us out here, seemed like this was like an abrupt decision.
Yeah.
We could maybe speculate that this wasn't unknown to the coaching staff, to Mike Norvell. I think they knew a little bit. They were trying to kind of force his hand. Is he going to be here? Is he not? You know, obviously with the contract. My point of saying that is, one, I wouldn't necessarily hold this as a caution, because I think Mike can, if he gets back to his good ways, he can build the offensive scheme around the type of offensive line he has. So you may not see a lot of counter this year, but you might see a lot of like trap where you're pulling that guard, you know, over, because the guards, you know, that typically are a little bit more nimble. You might see counter where instead of using GT counter, which is guard tackle counter, you might see a lot more guard tight end counter.
Yeah.
You might see even a center tight end counter, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you don't see those as often, but sometimes you can pull that center. He snaps and then he's coming around with the tight end coming around with him or that. So I would imagine, and also I would just say this real quick, is that Mike Norvell might also run some of that power stuff. Remember, his offense is the Gus Malzahn offense is
same
Mike
tree,
Norvell yeah. is the base offense. So Gus's offense is Mike Norvell's base offense, and then Mike builds off of that. Obviously, he has more complex route trees for the wide receivers and stuff like that. But I think he has shown the ability to adapt his offense to the type of players that he has.
Yeah, I think you'll probably see a meshing of the two systems, right? Because, I mean, you do have to understand that was like the FSU's best running game since 1995. So, like, I think you can say, okay, well, some of these things work. We've recruited that kind of body. Right. Let's do these types of things. We'll see how counter works. You know, Mike Norvell loves some counter now. He's going to run some counter.
Boy, love him counter.
But one other thing that I did want to say, too, before we get into the personnel, looking back at passing game last year, was that, you know, you also had, again, the 5'10 quarterback who really couldn't see over the offensive line. And it was primarily a downfield vertical passing game.
That's it.
So you're having to sit back there and wait. Mike Norvell's more that short to intermediate passing game. So they're going to try and get the ball out faster for Ashton Daniels this year to help this offensive line out. So, yeah, to your point, man, the offenses are very similar, but they do different things. And I like Mike Norvell's offense with the things that it does, the misdirection and things like that. It just may look different this year. Maybe a blending of the systems. To your point, it may be using the tight end on a counter instead of the tackle if, you know, Xavier Chaplin's not a pulling type of guy because he's so big.
Right.
Now, I do – when I look at some of the guys and we get into this, you know, like the Nwayu kid, he pulled. They ran counter at Stephen F. Austin, so he's a guy that can pull. Nate Pass is a guy that he played tackle and guard, so he's a little bit more of an athletic body. So it's not like trying to fit a square peg into a round hole, right? It's just more like an oval peg into a round hole or something like that. Like, it might get there. You just might have to pound it a little bit harder to get it there. But before we get into the personnel, Michael, if you want to get in on the conversation with us, man, the best place to do it is over at the new community we built for Noel fans, the new home for Seminole Sports Talk. Now, look, we've been having some fun conversations over there. You get all of our content. You'll stay up to date on it. It works just like an app on your phone, so you can just download it straight to your phone and get right in on the conversation. You don't have to go hunting through web pages and all that. I don't know about you, but I got like 150 browser tabs open at any given time. Sorry for those that have OCD. But, man, if you guys are interested in joining that, you can head on over to plantthespear.com. You will see a link to boards in the top menu or the mobile menu. You click on that. It'll take you right over to the PTS community page, and you can sign up from there. You can get started for completely free, a no strings attached, 100% free account. You can get in on the conversation and just have a good time in there with other like-minded Noel fans. Or if you'd like to support independent FSU coverage and what we're doing here at Plant the Spear to help us continue to bring you these breakdowns, continue to bring like giveaways and things like that, you can help support us starting at just $8 a month when you sign up for a PTS Insiders account. You'll get access to a premium board there and a couple of other premium features, ad-free and all that stuff. So I just want to encourage you guys, man, the season's coming, right? And if you want a good place to stay up to date with all of our content, we're going to have live chats for game days where we can get in there and just fire it off. It's like Twitter without all the stuff you don't care about, right? So make sure you guys go check that out at plantthespear.com. Everything that you do, if you do a paid account, goes right back into making PTS a better outlet. So, man, PTS community, make sure you guys hit that up over at plantthespear.com. Now, Michael, let's talk about some personnel because, man, the pie is only made up of the ingredients that it has. So we got to talk about the guys in here. And I think you have to start with Xavier Chaplin, right? More than likely going to be your starting left tackle, a key piece of this offensive line. This is the one that kind of feels like the crown jewel of what they went out and got from the portal. 6'8", 346, as I mentioned, a mountain of a human being, redshirt senior. He was a former three-star coming out of high school. you know, he had a kind of up and down history, right? He was really good at Virginia Tech. He was a four-star transfer, number two offensive lineman in the portal when he left Virginia Tech. Even after the kind of down season last year at Auburn, which there's a lot of down at Auburn, let's just say that, he was a four-star transfer there. Again, the number five offensive tackle when he left Auburn. So this is a guy that, you know, even though he had a down year, the potential is still there because he was great at Virginia Tech. Ton of experience, man. 37 career starts, 2,270 snaps all time, all power four. So that's what I like too.
Yep.
There's not a lot of guesswork there. Best season was 2024 at Virginia Tech. He had so for those of you who aren't familiar with PFF grades, look, I know they're not the gospel, but it's kind of hard to grade the trench players, right? 60 is kind of your average. Mm-hmm. 70 is your power four starter level status. That's what you're looking for. Well, his grade in 2024 overall at Virginia Tech was 69.9. So a good power five starter there, 70.4 on run block, 72.8 on pass block. Had that's why he was the number two offensive tackle in the portal when he left, right? He got an ACC honorable mention while he was there. Then last year, he had a little bit of a down year at Auburn, 55.5 PFF, 56.4 on the run block, but still 68.2 on the pass block. He was, you know, one of the better pieces on a not so great offensive line there at Auburn. He did have the one thing that stands out with him more than anything, which I think drug his grade down a lot, was the 12 penalties.
Yeah.
Now, the one thing that I will say about that is he does have a hearing issue that Auburn identified midseason last year that I'm hoping Florida State is able to work around that and kind of help him out with that. Because Hugh Freeze even did say in a press conference, like, hey, we identified this. We should have done more to help him out there. Eight of his 12 penalties were on the road, right? Mm-hmm. And again, you're talking about playing places like Texas A&M and Oklahoma and stuff like that, where it's really, really loud. So hopefully they've got that fixed, right? And the other thing is, when Herb Hand got Michael Pettis last year, now he was a penalty prone guy too, right? 9, 10, and 7 penalties, cut that down to 4.
Yeah.
So you're hoping that Herb Hand can do the same thing with him. Now, a couple other notes on Chaplin, I'll throw it back to you because I know you were able to watch some film on him. He did give up 8 pressures in 2 games last year at Auburn, but no more than 2 in any other games, right? In 2024, he gave up 5 in a game, then no more than 2 in any other game. So again, I don't expect him to be elite, but I do think if he can take that kind of Micah Pettis level jump under Herb Hand, cut down on the penalties. Micah Pettis had his best PFF grade of his career, and he came in good after being under Herb Hand for a year. If he can take that level jump, I think you have a really good, you know, above average third-ish team all ACC type of guy. Again, I'm not expecting him to be a first or second round draft pick, a first team all ACC or anything like that, but he can be good enough.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, yeah, this is kind of the, like you said, the crown jewel of their transfer portal offensive line class this year. I mean, he did start 12 games at Auburn. The game I watched more specifically to him, I watched the Vanderbilt game, which he did really well in that game. I watched the Missouri game. I watched the other couple other games. The game that really stood out to me was obviously against the Kentucky game. Nobody in Auburn was having a good game that day.
No, they were not, including Ashton Daniels.
Including Ashton Daniels. Running for his life. There were a couple plays that I saw where Xavier just got beat off the block. I mean, just first step, that DE was already in his armpit, like just gone. And he was just kind of slow off the block there a little bit a couple times. So obviously, you know, gave up some pressures in that game. But the thing I will say on the other side, though, is that in the 12 games that he started for Auburn in 2025, he earned a 90 grade in 5 of those games.
Which is excellent.
Which is excellent. Speaking of which, the highest was 97 against Missouri. In that game I watched, holy cow. Yeah. Nobody was touching the quarterbacks in that game. At least from his side. I mean, he was incredible. So if Florida State can get those 5 games and expand that over 12 game, man, that left side is shored up for you. And that's Ashton Daniels' blind side. So this is the most important side. You can't see that side. So like, you want your best offensive lineman, best tackle on that side. And I imagine he is going to be your starting left tackle.
Yeah, and I think that's why they took him, because they know, right, that 2023 and four, or that 24 Virginia Tech, those five good games, right, you know that's in there. So you know, you just have to get that unlocked, right? Yep. And again, if you can work past that hearing issue, then you can cut down on the penalties. I think you got a really good, like, again, man, if he can be Micah Pettis good, I think that's good enough for you, right? Now, moving inside a spot to left guard, I think you're actually going to finally see a homegrown guy break through for once, which we've been wanting forever and has just not really ever been the case. Kind of the Alex Atkins guys who have just came in with a lot of hype and just never really did anything. But I think this is finally the year you see someone break through. And I think your left guard is going to be Andre Otto, 6'5", 318, redshirt junior, been in the program for a while, right? Former three-star, number 53 offensive tackle in 2023. He did get thrown into the fire as a redshirt freshman in 2024 because everything was on fire and they were just throwing whatever they could at it. I remember watching that, man. I mean, he played 200 snaps, had three starts in that game. He had some ups and downs. There was some good moments where you're like, okay, this kid looks pretty good. I remember, I think it was the Clemson game. Like, buddy got his lunch money took a few times in that game. But again, you're talking about as a redshirt freshman. He's now a redshirt junior. Now, he only played 80 snaps last year, and 55 of that was against East Texas A&M and Kent State. Because again, remember, Herb Hand doesn't really rotate a whole lot. He had good grades, but it was against worse competition. 65.5 PFF, 63.1 pass block, 82.5, or excuse me, run block, 82.5 pass block. So good pass blocker here. He allowed zero pressures in 23 pass blocking snaps. Again, very small sample size. So there's a lot of questions here with Andre Otto and what he can be able to do. He has played 185 snaps at left guard, 94 at right guard. So he can play either spot, whichever you need him to do. But again, man, when I look at Otto, he's entering his fourth year at Florida State. He's probably the odds on favorite to start at one of your guard positions. But again, there, if he doesn't work out, and we're going to get to this at the end of this, at the end of the segment, there are a few combos that can be shuffled if he's not the guy, right? Which, again, we'll talk about that. But I do think right now I feel good about Otto as a guy who's been in the program, coming up to his fourth year. He's had a chance to really kind of bulk up and have a year under Herb Hand's coaching. So if he's going to be in there, Herb obviously sees something that he likes.
Well, Jesse, it's about potentially dang daggum time.
Yeah, I agree. I agree,
it's about time that Florida State had its own homegrown offensive lineman finally make it to the – I mean, I can't remember the last time we actually – probably you have to go back to the early Jimbo years where we had a homegrown offensive line that we recruited, developed, and put through. I think since
that was really good. That was really good.
Thanks for that caveat. That was really good. Since then, if they've been homegrown, they've been terrible because they haven't been developed, or they've been transfers that been good, or transfers that weren't developed and or weren't good. That's literally it. So it's about time we get somebody from that we've recruited, hopefully developed well. He's had, this will be his second year in Herb Hand's system of development, of coming there. He was a guy that when he came in, you know, we had a lot of high hopes for, and it just seemed like, man, none of these guys are really catching on. We just keep recruiting over and over and over to them. So I watched that game against Clemson. He was learning. You know, we always say you either win or you learn, right? And so he was learning. A lot of questions. Don't really know what to expect from this guy. But if his acumen shows anything from his high school days to what we saw a little bit of some of the things that he was able to do, then obviously the future is bright for him.
Yeah, and I mean, again, when you're talking about that Clemson team, they have really – the one thing they have had is really good defensive linemen, right? And you're a redshirt freshman getting thrown into the mix. Demetrius May – wait a minute. Was that who I was talking about? There was one in 2023 that I was looking at that Florida State was good. I'm sorry. I just had it, and this is – bad here. Darius Washington was the one that I was thinking of. He was like all ACC in 23, but then he was part of the problem in 24. So that's why I said, let's caveat that with the good, right? Now, moving on to the center, the heart of your offensive line. Man, I really, really wish you could get Luke Pettibon back for another year. Who I'm looking at here as your starter is going to be Braden Joyner, coming over from Purdue, 6'2", 327. He's definitely an off center body, right? That shorter offensive line at 6'2", 327. Redshirt junior, was a three-star coming out of high school, number 42 interior offensive lineman, but did hold 34 offers. He started his career at Auburn, redshirted in 23, played in 10 games with five starts in the final five games for Auburn there at left guard. and he was not a center at Auburn. He was a left guard. And he had some not-so-good games early on when you look across his grades, but he did settle in to finish the season pretty strong, especially in the final four games, which did include Texas A&M and Alabama. So he has had some good games against some good teams. 62.4 PFF, 63.6 run block, and a 55.6 pass block. So some things to clean up there. But his final three games, once he got settled in as a starter, man, was 72.3, 82.5, and 69.1. So you see the potential is there. Now, he did transfer to Purdue as the number 46 interior offensive line transfer. He switched to center, where he started all 12 games, and it was another season with some good and some not so good. But again, man, he was more consistent overall, I will say that. But he had, he played against Notre Dame. He played against Ohio State. He played against Indiana. He played against a lot of good competition there and finished with a PFF grade of 62.3, a run block grade of 61.2, and a pass block grade of 63.2. So slightly above average. Now, let me start with the good, okay? Because there's some this is when we're just going to air it all out, man. There's some concerns here, right? Only three career penalties in two years. So that I do like, which is kind of harder to get flagged at the center position. So let's keep it 100, right? This is what I'm worried about. So I look back at Purdue. Last year, and when I go to PFF and I filter down, I do power four with a minimum snap filter. So you don't got a guy that's getting graded off like five snaps. He allowed the most pressures of any power four center in the country last year at 26. And the hurries were 23. Yikes. Yeesh. That's just not good. He was ranked 73rd of 81 centers in efficiency grade. By comparison, remember, I said he allowed 26 pressures last year. Luke Pettibon, four.
Wow.
Just four. He ranked second in efficiency grade. He was 58th of 81 in run block grade. And Purdue's, you know, okay, well, maybe is it a Tommy Castellano situation? Not really. Purdue's offensive line was 12th highest in O-line owned pressures last year, which is not good. Remember, we said Tommy was 11th highest in quarterback owned pressures. They were the 12th highest in O-line owned pressures last year, and he had the second highest percentage on that offensive line. This one makes me a little bit nervous because Florida State's putting a lot of stock into this kid, right? Now, he did transfer to FSU as the number 77 interior offensive line. He's an experienced guy at the power four level. He can play guard and he can play center for you. So you do get, you know, a little bit of versatility there. And what I'm really hoping is Herb Hand can, as we talked about, man, bring him to that next level. Because after looking at these numbers, man, I'm a little bit nervous.
Okay.
But the one thing I will say as I throw it back to you is I did get a chance to go back and watch about 90% of the Purdue-Notre Dame game. And I thought he was okay in that game, right? I didn't see any glaring, like, oh my gosh, this guy's just terrible, right? I think there's some things like he could probably stay on his blocks a little bit longer. I think he kind of starts window shopping for defenders a little bit too fast in there. But overall, man, the snaps were clean for the most part. From what I saw, they were good. But man, again, when you're talking about a center who gave up four pressures last year to a guy you're switching to that gave up 26, literally the most in the country, that makes me nervous.
Yeah.
I mean, like we said, we're gonna keep it real, man.
We're gonna keep it 100.
The good and the bad, man.
Right.
And this definitely made me this. You know, it's funny because we've had people reach out about our position previews. They're like, okay, you guys are getting me hyped up for this year, and I'm like, yeah, I'm hyping myself up a little bit too much. Well, this is one of those kind of cold bucket of water moments where it's like, okay, let's just. I'm not saying he can't get better, and I trust Herb Hand to do good things, but the reality of the situation is this is one of the things that I'm now worried about.
Right. Well, and the thing is, like, you know, I wonder too, I was going to ask you this question is, how much of a factor if the QB is mobile or not, does that depend on the pressure?
It, you know, well, and I think that's where you break down the quarterback versus O-line own pressures.
Yeah.
Because obviously if you got a guy back there who's running around doing a lot of things, you just got to block for longer. Right. But the other thing too, is as a center, you get help almost every play, unless you got a nose tackle lined up right over you. So you shouldn't be allowing a ton of pressure, but as a center, that can also be dependent on if your guard next to you is not good or not either, right? Because you can only block the half a guy that you're splitting with him. And if he's not good, then that hurts you too. And Purdue's guy was not like a Tommy Castellanos, but he was definitely not like a DJU either.
Gotcha. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Cause I was just wondering if maybe that factored into that. Yeah. You know, he gives you some good, he gives you some concern. The hope would be is that he gets under Herb Hand and is able, that concern is able to be lessened over time. You know, obviously, if that's a weakness, if that's a glaring weakness that he's giving up pressure and he's your best option at center right now, or at least that's our assumption, then that means that Mike Norvell will have to scheme around that. You know, moving the pocket.
Yeah.
Obviously, they're going to run Ashton. We know that a lot more, which should cut down on some of that pressure. Obviously, the worst kind of pressure for a quarterback is up the middle pressure. That's the worst, yeah. Right? Because pressure coming on the edge is one thing. You can kind of escape that through the middle or, yeah, you know, whatever. But pressure up the middle, man, it for some reason, it doesn't matter if the edges are clean. That pressure comes up the middle, and your options feel extremely limited at that point in time.
Yep.
So they're going to have to scheme around that if that shows up to be an issue. Our hope has to be is that Herb Hand has been able to work with him over the spring and summer to kind of clean some of that up. And then, like you said, a lot of that depends on your guards to your left and to your right, because the center's rarely taking on someone one-on-one. Rarely is a center taking someone, right? It's usually a double team, or he's getting help from somewhere, a chip or something like that. So if they can scheme around that, then the hope is that he will, you know, not regress to that.
Yeah, and let me clean this up a little bit, right? I do want to say that he did move from guard to center, right? And I will say, as someone who had played every position along the offensive line throughout high school, I played all five spots. There's a lot of responsibility on snapping that ball. You know, guard, you're just reacting and blocking.
Right.
So maybe I think early on, when I look at his game-by-game grades, I think maybe early on he was just settling into the new position as the center. There's a lot going on. You got to make the calls. You got to get everybody lined up. You got to identify the mic. You got to do all these things, right? And he had zero pressures in the first two games against Ball State and Southern Illinois. You would expect that against bad teams. But then you go, USC gave up four pressures, Notre Dame was two pressures, Illinois was four pressures, Minnesota was six pressures, Northwestern was four pressures. And a lot of those aren't good teams, right, outside of Notre Dame and maybe USC there, and Illinois is decent. So you were giving up a ton of pressures. But then maybe he started to settle in a little bit, right, because you look at Rutgers with zero pressures, Michigan was one, Ohio State was only one, Washington was two, and Indiana was two to end the season. So he did progressively get better throughout the course of the season. So hopefully you can build on what those last five or six games were, when maybe he settled in at the center position, right? Or maybe, you know, again, we'll talk about some other guys, some combinations that you can shuffle. Man, if he just ain't working out of center, he was good at Auburn as guard. And we talked about he played against Texas A&M and Alabama. So maybe you can move him to a guard position and bring in another guy we're going to talk about later at center. So again, just know that's out there. That's right. The reality of the situation, right? He gave up the most pressures of any center in Power Four last year. But again, a lot of that was early in the season when he was at a new position, and he did get a lot better later in the season against better competition. I mean, we know Indiana and Ohio State and Michigan have good defensive lines, so he did get better throughout them. Now let's move to his right, to who I think is going to be your starting right guard, and that is Nate Papps, 6'7", 315-pound redshirt senior. Man, it was actually a two/three-star edge coming out of high school, so converted to offensive line. But he's been offensive line the entire time that he's been in college. Started 38 games at Bowling Green. So this is one of your more experienced offensive lines or linemen here. 27 games at offensive guard, 11 at offensive tackle. So this is another one of those versatile players that you can move around if you need to. He's got over 2,100 total snaps of experience. His PFF grades did improve every single year, with his last year being his best. So you're hoping that you're going to build onto that and get the best out of him this year. Obviously, there is some risk coming from Bowling Green, that translation risk. But he did play against Louisville last year, and he didn't do great pass blocking. I'm going to be for real with you there, at a 24.4 grade. I'll say that quietly because that's pretty bad. He allowed four pressures and three hurries, but zero sacks. And he did split snaps at right guard and right tackle. So I think what they figured out with him was, we need to put him at guard, right? We don't need to have him at tackle. Now, he did play against Penn State and Texas A&M in 2024, all at left guard, and did much better. Only three pressures total in those two games and slightly below average PFF grades, and actually had a 71.8 grade versus Penn State. So, I mean, it's a guy who's got a lot of experience and a lot of good size. There's that translation risk that we talked about coming from the G5. But I think the biggest thing with him is he can play your swing tackle if something doesn't work out at tackle.
Right.
But he obviously was much better inside at guard. So if you can keep him inside at guard and you can build on what he did last year, I think he can be a good serviceable right guard for you, or left guard if you have to put him there. I just think the one thing you want to avoid is having to use him at tackle.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, this is a guy that you're looking at to come into that position. You know, he only gave up one sack on 354 pass plays last year. One sack. I mean, that's pretty good. He had 766 offensive snaps, 493 at right tackle, and then 273 at right guard. So, you know, just depends on that. I do agree that I think he should probably, hopefully, be one of your guard positions there.
Yeah.
You're not necessarily want him out that tackle spot there, but at least you're getting someone who has played significant, you know, I think he's 42 games with 38 starts on offensive line. So he's coming in with experience. It may not be the best experience, but he's coming in with experience. And again, I'm going to probably say this for a lot of you're hoping that Herb Hand can work his magic and get him up to at least average, you know, because if you get an average, you're going to be able to do some things there.
Yeah, and you know, again, I point back to 2024 with knowing 2025 was his best year. When he was at the guard position, he played good against Penn State and Texas A&M.
Right.
So at least you can look back at that and go, okay, well, if we can keep him at guard, and he did good against those teams, they ain't no better than what you're going to see in the ACC on most occasions.
Right.
So I think you feel good about him there. And then moving out to your right tackle, kind of the biggest gamble that on the offensive line coming from the FCS level, but I have heard good things about him. I was able to go watch some film on him. Man, the hardest part about this player here is saying his name. Chimdia Nwayu is what I've been going with the whole time, so that's what I'm going to stick with. 6'5", 307, will be a redshirt junior this year. Again, came from Stephen F. Austin at the FCS level. He did start 14 games there last year and did play in 24 for a total of almost 1,000 snaps. So even though he's kind of on the younger side of the players here, you know, like a Andre Otto, he's got almost 1,000 snaps of experience, which is great. 14 starts last year, as I mentioned. Now, he graded out well as a starter last year, 68.9 PFF grade. Overall, 58 run blocker, 81.4 pass blocker. Now, he's a pretty darn good pass blocker. Had excellent pass blocking grades in all but one game. Now, he has only faced one Power 4 team in Houston, which, you know, to me, that's still kind of a G5-ish program as they're transitioning. But it's still a good team there. And he did have just below average PFF grades, but he only allowed two pressures, right? Yeah. And so I went back and I was able to watch every snap of him in that game. And when I watched him, man, he's got good feet. Like, that's a good thing to start with, right? He's got good feet, which is big for an offensive tackle. Yeah. He pulls because they run a lot of counter there too. He pulls well. He climbs well. The thing that really stuck out to me on film, and because, man, again, as a guy who played offensive tackle, and I played against a couple D1 guys in high school, right? Man, that outside edge is hard, right? Mm-hmm. Reach blocks, getting that pass blocking edge. That was the one thing, man. He gives up that outside shoulder a little bit too much against Houston, who's kind of more of what you're going to be seeing in the ACC. Some of them quicker defensive ends, he's playing catch up, right? He's trying to turn his body because they're already past him. So I think Herb can work on that with your drop. I think he can get him a little bit faster out of the drop. The other thing I'd like to see him use his hands and his arms a little bit better and do weight balancing better, because there's a few times I noticed he'd get his shoulders over his feet and he'd get off balance. And he would let the defenders get into his chest a lot, which you want to keep them at arm's length. You want to grab inside. And be able to control that defender is what you really want to do. Man, I feel like I'm want to play some offensive line again here. But like that. But you see, like, the footwork is hard to teach. So you got that. You got size and you got experience in this kid. And so I like what I saw on tape. Right. I don't think it was anything bad.
Right.
I just think it does make me worry a little bit against the better defensive ends. Man, if he gives up that outside edge, those guys are going to Ashton Daniels is going to need to climb up in that pocket. Right. But hopefully Herb Hand can clean those things up. That it's more technical stuff, right? That you got to clean up.
Right.
But again, You know, this was one of my six underrated players that we did on the last show, to where I don't need you to be first team all ACC.
Right.
I just need you to be good enough, man. Right. I need you to be what Gunnar Hansen was last year, maybe a little bit better. And you got him for more than 1 year, unless he just has a crazy breakout year, which I'd be okay with that too. But I think he's going to be your starting right tackle. Again, I see some good things. I see some things that hopefully Herb can clean up. But man, if he can just be a good, serviceable right tackle, you know, I think you, and allow you to keep Nate Papps in at guard, I think that's your best combination.
Yeah. Well, before I give my thoughts, really quick, just to help our listeners here, you use two terms that they may not be familiar with. What does it mean when an offensive lineman has to climb? What does that look like?
That means climb to the second level, get to a linebacker, which happens a lot on the offensive line. That's right. Basically need to slow down the guy in front of you and then get up to the linebacker. And, you know, if you're a big, slow offensive lineman, that can be hard. So being able to make an impact block, shed, and get up to that second level, that's really important. That's where you turn a 3 yard gain into an 8 or 10 yard gain.
Yes. And when you mean you get the block, a shed is to get the guy, get him out of the way,
get him out. Up. Yep.
That's right. And then when you say an offensive line has to work on his drop, explain that to our listeners.
That's getting out of your stance, right? You see the things on social media where they're doing the step backs and stuff like that. It's how fast you get out of your stance, because
that's right.
As an offensive tackle, you're at a disadvantage, right? Now, the advantage you have is you know the snap count.
Right.
But that defensive line, man, they are – the thing with an offensive lineman, you can't show your hand, right? You can't – you want to lean if it's a run block, right? You want to get down and lean.
Get on them.
But you don't want to give away that it's a pass. So you can't, like, be leaning back and showing your hand beforehand. And so the defensive end – a lot of times they're going to shoot up field. They're in a sprinter stance. And so you have to basically go from standing up to try and get 3 to 4 steps back to kind of wall them off. That's why you don't see them ever really stalemate. They just kind of run them around because they already got momentum.
Correct.
You're going backwards. They're going forwards. They're in a power position. You're not. And so that's the hard thing. That's why I said the reach block is the hardest block for an offensive lineman. That thing used to give me nightmares, because you have to try and get around that defensive end who's coming full speed and push him back inside. So that's why I say having
your help.
That's where a crackback block is huge, because, like, man, as an offensive lineman, if I know I got a receiver tight end that's about to ear hole this dude, that's a great day for me, right? Because I've tried to reach block a few D1 guys and it's almost impossible. When you're me. And so having good feet is a good place to start, right? Because you can teach them to get back faster. And so he's got a good platform to work with. But, yeah, again, he just got beat to the outside quite a bit in that Houston game. And so that's one where, you know, if Ashton Daniels is on a 3 or 5 step drop, that's going to be right in your face. So you're going to have to climb that pocket, which goes back to the center. If you're bending those tackles or those defensive ends and you get center pressure
up the middle,
you're cooked. So that's why this is why we say all five positions matter.
Exactly. And that, my whole point of asking you that was because the thing you would worry about is if he doesn't have the skill set to improve those things.
Yeah.
He obviously has the body, or he wouldn't be, well, let's hope he wouldn't be recruited at a D1 power four level. So what it now depends on is, can Herb Hand get it out of him? You know, football is football. Like, you understand exactly what a tackle is going through in your highest level of football, high school, right? And yet, it takes the kind of coaches to be able to get to him and help him develop that. So if the coaches, if Herb Hand and the assistant offensive line coach, if those guys can get that out of him, get him better on the technical side of those things, now you'll start to see these improvements and start to see him get better. He has it in him. I mean, he was the highest graded Southland Conference offensive tackle per PFF.
Yeah.
So he obviously has it in him. Now, can he get that to a power four level?
Yeah, and I didn't see anything in his game that, like, oh, he's just limited. This is nothing you can't fix, right? And again, I played – man, I had an offer from Valdosta State. Like, I'm 5'10", 240. Like,
bigger than I had.
Right, that was the most I could have done. If I wasn't a bad kid, I would have at least played I would have played FCS college ball as an offensive lineman. But I didn't see anything that couldn't be fixed, right? It's – with offensive linemen, it's – you know, you'll take a bull in a china shop. You need the size and the strength, because the technical stuff is all stuff that can be worked on.
Right.
And so he's got good feet already. He's got good size. He's got experience at the tackle position. These are things they can clean up. It's just, you know, you're going to be facing better defensive ends than probably what he saw even at Houston in that one game. So continuing down the line here to kind of we're going to go through the next three that we think are in that kind of eight-man group. After that, man, guys, it's just a guess. It's a lot of freshmen, redshirt freshmen, guys. I don't think you're going to see the field. Now, I'm going to start with the top one here. And what I actually like about these three is the three that you have are primarily one's a center guard, one's a center, and one's a tackle. So you kind of have all your bases covered, what I like. Now, this is the kid, to me, that's a little bit of an X factor. I think he might be pushing for a starting position, and that is Paul Bowling, 6'3", 305 sophomore, started 12 games for Troy last year as a true freshman, I believe. He has a true freshman, 9 at center, final 3 at left guard, had solid PFF grades for a young guy being thrown into the action, especially after he moved to guard, which I think is where you want him to be at Florida State. And, man, he did play against Clemson when he was at Troy, and that was the game that Troy should have upset Clemson
almost
in.
Should have won.
They almost did. And he graded out in as 63 overall, 58.7 run block, and 74.3 pass block. He did not allow a single pressure in 37 pass block snaps. That's against Clemson. Mm-hmm. I went back and watched the tape on him, man. Like, it wasn't perfect, but for a freshman, he held his own against Clemson. Like, when I watched him, I was like, okay, I see why they want him, because he's got what it takes to be a good offensive guard at the Power Four level with a little bit of work. And he's got multiple years left as a true sophomore now. So to me, he's one of your top choices to either start or be that sixth man, especially at the inside. Like, he can play center, but I think you like the next guy we're talking about more at center. But this is a guy that can be either one for you, and I think he can do it well.
Yeah, young guy. I mean, man, I think he's the first in the history of Troy to be a center and start, or be a freshman and start at center there as well. And 450 pass plays, I believe. He only gave up 3 sacks on the offensive line there. So, look, this guy's got, you know, obviously there's potential. They see a lot in him. Obviously, we're going to have to see him develop. But I like him being in that next level of, these are the guys we're going to have to use if we need to go to them.
Yeah, I think he's like a Jacob Rizzi type of guy, right? Yeah. A guy that you can't put a tackle, but you feel good about center guard if you have to put him in there. Right. I don't think there's a big drop-off if you have to put Paul Bowling in there. Again, I can see why they wanted him, especially when you watch that Clemson tape. Like, he was pretty good in that game. The next one here that we're talking about, the kind of 7 of 8 guys, the one that I think fits in best at center is a homegrown guy, and that's Sandman Thompson.
Sandman Thompson.
They don't call him Sandman for no reason, right? Because he's putting them to sleep out there. 6'1", 318, definitely got that center body, that kind of short, squatty offensive lineman. He is a redshirt freshman. He's a young guy who they really like. He played 68 snaps last year, mostly against Kent State, but he looked promising in that game. The only freshman offensive line to see the field last year, so that says something about what he was able to do. Probably not a guy you want starting right now, right? But I think he's a quality option as a backup that gives you some flexibility if you have to shuffle the deck. I do expect to see him probably get a few snaps in New Mexico State. I do expect him to probably play a little bit there in Central Arkansas. But again, I think it's a guy that has a lot of upside that you just don't want to see starting this year. But again, if you have to go to him, I don't think it's a break glass in case of emergency either.
Yeah, yeah. This guy, I mean, listen, he's a high school state championship winner. He led, I think it's Coco, to state high school championship. Obviously, he was one of the more rated recruits that Alex Atkins was able to bring in. And then he just kind of, as they all did, just disappeared. Like, you didn't really get to see much of him. There was speculation that maybe, and then obviously last year he took 68 snaps behind Luke Pettibon. Like you said, this is not a guy we want to see. This is like, oh gosh, if he's in, something has happened to our starting center. But if he does get in, you have confidence. You have confidence that this is not like, he's not fresh meat. He's not somebody who's never taken a collegiate snap. He's had 68 of them. So you feel good about that. And you feel good about the potential that he has. If he keeps growing into this body, keeps growing in the technical side, obviously if he can get Herb Hand, you know, a couple more years, maybe if you know, some records work themselves out, if they're around, then maybe we'll be able to see this guy someday as our starting center.
Yeah, and he was actually a pretty good wrestler in high school at Coco too. Mm. And obviously, wrestling background is huge for an offensive lineman, mm-hmm. right? Because you just got to manhandle some dudes around there. So the last one here of the top eight that we're going to talk about is Jonathan Daniels, who I think is kind of your next up at the tackle position. 6'4", 321, redshirt sophomore. Per the 247 composite, he was a four-star and the number eight interior offensive lineman coming out of high school, but he's been moved more to that tackle role. Mm-hmm. He did play 81 snaps last year at right tackle. Again, mostly against cupcakes and blowouts, but he graded out very well in those games. A good but inexperienced option at tackle is what you're going to get out of Jonathan Daniels. I heard Herb Hand say some good things about him in the spring. And it's just one of those things, man, where it's like, I don't think this is the guy that you want to have starting this year. Mm-mm. But if something were to happen, I think he's a guy that's got talent and he's just never really got a chance to prove it. So, again, yeah. I look for him to play in those cupcake games early on so that if you need him later on down the season per injury or something like that, he can have a little bit more experience under his belt. But that's kind of the eighth of the eighth, man. As you can see, of the eight, we're going from, like, experience, we've seen it, to we're kind of getting some guesswork now with some yeah. young guys that got some yeah. talent. And Jonathan Daniels is kind of that last guy that, because he fits more in the tackle role,
right?
You know, we'll talk about the shuffling the deck that you can do later. But if you're looking for a pure plug and play without shuffling, Jonathan Daniels is probably going to be your tackle.
Yeah, I mean, he has, of the rest that are left, he has the most, you know, power four snaps with, you know, he obviously played against Wake Forest, Virginia Tech, NC State, and Florida. So you'd give him a leg up on that. But that's, honestly, you hope you don't have to go to him.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. And then, you know, you got guys like Jaden Todd, who's a big guy, 6'6", 303, redshirt sophomore, hasn't played a whole lot, wasn't super great when he did play. So these are the guys that you're hoping just develop. Right. The one I will say that I am kind of side-eyeing here, I don't think you're going to see him because you just never know how these work out, is Stephen Moore. This is a guy who was 6'5", 327,
huge.
From the JUCO ranks, humongous mm-hmm. dude. He was the number 11 JUCO offensive tackle. Okay, so he just signed with Florida State this year, so we didn't get to see him last year. He's coming from JUCO. Again, it's hard for the trench players sometimes to translate to that level, but just from the size and being almost top 10 JUCO offensive tackle, I think that's another guy that you could put in the mix there. So let's wrap this thing up, Michael, with some final thoughts here. In my opinion, man, I think you got about eight guys that you like, as we talked about, maybe nine at the most. But the five projected starters, and then you get the plus the two center guards and the tackle. So you do have some versatility in what you can do if you have to shuffle a few combos if need be, right? You can put Sandman at center. You can put Bowling at center. You can put Joyner at center. You also have Bowling and Joyner that can both play guards if you have to put Sandman at center. For whatever reason, Jonathan Daniels can play tackle, or you can kick Nate Papps out to tackle, who's got experience there, if you feel better about him there, and then put one of those other options at guard. So the good thing is you have a ton of options, especially on the interior offensive line. Now, you're a little bit thinner when you get out to tackle because you're going to be putting a guy out there in either Nate Papps, who, you know, has a lot of experience at tackle, and you feel comfortable with him playing the position. He's just better as a guard, but he's also 6'7". He's got long arms. He's got a kind of a tackle body. And then you're also going to look at, you'd have to plug in a young guy in Jonathan Daniels. So at least that gives you some depth and some flexibility in what you're able to do up front. I do look for them to do some rotating during that New Mexico State game late in the game. Once it gets out of hand, should it, hopefully will. And because I think you're going to want to kind of get some experience for that 6th, 7th, and 8th guy, maybe try a few combos to see what they do. You know, now if you have a good notion on who the starting five is before then, I think you're going to want to lock them in and get them a lot of the reps, but you're going to want to see some of those young guys in that game. And so again, man, just to kind of bring this thing home, I don't expect this year's offensive line to be spectacular, but I think you do have some good players who are kind of older guys with a lot of experience in most cases. And I do trust Herb Hand to get them right, you know, especially with more time on the grass than they had last year, point blank. Like, that's huge to be able to have spring, to be able to have summer together, to be able to go into fall camp healthy. You know, hopefully the injury bug doesn't bite you. And if you can keep your starting five intact with those other guys, I think you feel good about what you got, you know. But man, at the end of the day, this group's success will largely determine what that offense could be. Because as we talked about with Jimbo, you know, you can see our Jimbo Fisher interview on the channel as well from ACC Media Days. You know, he said, man, you got skill on the outside. When I asked, like, what's some strengths that Florida State can lean on this year? He said, man, they got strength on the outside. They got good running backs. But it all starts up front, because if those guys don't perform, nobody else will be. And my last thought to end this episode for me, man, is like, I'd be lying if I didn't tell you there's a concern for this group, right? When you hear the things about Joyner, when you see that your right tackle is an FCS transfer, when you know that Otto's, you know, a good guy, but he's never played a whole lot at the Power Four level. There are concerns. Is Xavier Chaplin going to be Virginia Tech or Auburn guy? Is it going to be the five games you talked about, or is he going to be the Kentucky guy? You know what right. I mean? The same thing we have with Ashton Daniels, right?
Right.
Which version of him are you going to be getting? But I don't expect it to be anything like 2024, because the pieces you have are decent, and I trust the guy coaching them up, right? He may not be able to recruit worth a flip, but he can develop well, which is the opposite of what we had with Alex Atkins, where you right. had all this talent, and you're like, why do we still suck in the offensive line?
Right.
Because you can't develop. You know what I mean? Like, this dude can make great stuff out of three-star offensive linemen. We've seen it at Central right. Florida. That was not the case in 2024. It didn't right. matter. The man couldn't coach Georgia's offensive line to be decent. So, I mean, he went to LSU as a run game coordinator, and they sucked at running the ball. So, I do trust Herb Hand, and I do trust some of the pieces on this offensive line. But again, man, I'd be lying if I didn't say I was a little bit concerned about what this group can be.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, you know, it's like a car without an engine. The car can look great. The mirrors can look great. The seat's great. The radio plays awesome. The tires are nice and shiny. The windows are tinted, right? You got everything looking good. Man, everything's perfect. But if the engine ain't working, bro, that car yeah. ain't going nowhere.
Yeah, or like a four-cylinder Camaro. You know what I mean? It looks like it should be great, and then it's not.
And then it's not. And the offensive yeah. line, that's going to be it. And so everything that this team is fighting for this year, obviously Mike Norvell's job, the coaching staff's job, getting back to national relevancy, all of that, it's highly predicated on the trenches. And number 1A is the offensive line. Can it actually live up to what it needs to live up to in order for this team to be successful? Do they have the ability to be developed in such a way that all the technical things that we talked about throughout this episode get addressed? And now we're seeing what each of these individuals collective as a one group of five can go and help this offense be. Can Mike Norvell scheme around the deficiencies of this offensive line should they show their ugly heads? Obviously, he's probably seen some of that in spring, so he already kind of has an idea what that could look like. And obviously, he hopefully is putting him and Herb Hand are putting in things to be able to get around that as well. But we'll see what that is. We don't know. We can only speculate. Obviously, we don't have access to practices or anything of that nature. So we'll try to keep you guys as best informed of what we're hearing, what we get, what the tea leaves fall our way. But then obviously against New Mexico State, even though New Mexico State is not a Power Four program, we will be able to see a little bit of what they're dealing with as far as this offensive line is. And then obviously against SMU is going to be the big test for them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it was even was it Duquesne a few years ago, and then like you ran for like 400 yards. You know, if you go out against New Mexico State and you run for 150 yards and give up 2-3 sacks, like that's a red flag, point blank period. I know it's the first game. I know it's new starters and all that stuff. But if you go out and you run it up on them and you keep the quarterback clean, I think you kind of feel good about what you got going into SMU. Yep. I do like that you have Ashton Daniels back there, who's a mobile guy that can kind of help that offensive line out. Not only a mobile guy, a big, strong guy, who's not going to get, you know, brought down by the first touch or anything like that. And I do like that you have some skill, from the back. So, like, they can help clean some things up should the offensive line not be excellent. I think Mike Norvell, to your point, is going to kind of know what they can and can't do. So you're going to get that ball out as quick as you can. But, yeah, man, I mean, I don't think the ceiling's going to be as high, but I don't think the floor is going to be super low either. So, you know, I just look for – man, just give me average ACC offensive line this year with the potential to be higher at a few spots, and I think you'll be good, right? I mean, again, anytime you're bringing in from Bowling Green and Purdue and Stephen F. Austin, like I don't know that you can expect it to be Georgia's offensive line or, you know, whatever the case may be, or Alabama or whatnot. So, but that doesn't mean, given Herb Hand's history, it can't still be a good serviceable offensive line. Right. So that's going to do it for our offensive line preview, guys. Again, It's the most important position on the field. So we wanted to take some extra time and kind of really go through this here for you guys. You know, man, this, it all starts up here. This determines everything for this offense, for this offense. And so, you know, whether you feel like the defensive strengths or not, you got to score points to win games. And you got to have a good offensive line to do it. So last word, guys, make sure you check out Alumni Hall FSU, today's sponsor, if you would like to get you some new Noel gear. 1415 Timberlane Road is the location in Tallahassee. Shop online at alumnihall.com. Navigate over to the FSU page and use code SPEAR to get 10%. If you want to get in on the conversation, connect with me and Michael on a deeper level, not horoscopes or anything like that, but you know what I mean? Like, if you want to get in on the conversation, get direct access to us, have access to the live game day chats coming up for the season that is just over a month away. The PTS community is the place to do it, right? We're building a new home for Florida State fans to come together and connect with others who bleed garnet and gold. So make sure you head over to plantthespear.com, hit the boards link in the menu, and it'll take you over there. You'll get to see what it all looks like before you even sign up, but you can get started for free, or you can help support independent FSU coverage starting at just $8 a month. So with that being said, guys, we will catch you on the next one. It'll be time for the defense next time we join you guys. So with that being said, Michael, we'll catch you all on the next one. As always,
go Noles.
Go Noles.